it's the same painting. You never finish it. You know, it may be on different surfaces, but your message and the intensity of your message is continued.
Shirley Woodson was born in Tennessee in 1936, but she grew up, flourished, and continues to live in Detroit. It's her city, her muse. Now 86, the artist recently opened her first ever solo exhibition at her hometown museum, the Detroit Institute of Arts. On view through June 12th, Shirley Woodson, Shield of the Nile Reflections, features 11 of the artist's big, vibrant canvases depicting black bathers and rivers. As both an educator and an artist, Shirley is widely respected, but the attention this show is garnering has suddenly turned her into a bit of an art world star. Rightly so. We recently chatted with the busy as ever artist and Valerie Mercer, the exhibition's curator and head of the DIA's Center for African American Art. From Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential.
First of all, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us. We're really excited about this. I'm so sorry I wasn't able to get up and see the show in person, but I've been scouring through all the materials. And of course, the works themselves are kind of knockouts. I can only imagine the impact they have standing in front of them and kind of taking them in person. I guess, Valerie, I'd like to begin with you and talk about the origin of this exhibition and how it all came to pass. You've been at the DIA for quite some time, and I know you have a large focus or even a mandate, as it were, to work with Detroit-based artists that bring them into the fold. So can you kind of give us the origin story of this exhibition and how it came to pass?
Sure. I do really focus on African-American artists, and certainly a part of that history and arts, the Detroit artists. So I've been working to pull a number of them into the museum for exhibitions and programs and even acquisitions for the collection. And Detroit has a good history of artists being very active. It has a really good community of artists that has a history to it. And so Shirley recently had received in 2021, the Kresge Foundation's Eminent Artist Award for her career, her achievements as a significant influencer for art in Detroit, important to the art community, has been, a professor of art history as well as an art teacher. You know, she's been an active artist for about 60 years. And she's very well known in the community. She's also helped a lot of artists with their careers as a mentor. She's been president of the National Conference of Artists, which is a large organization of African-American artists. And so when she received the award, actually some of us talked about it and then, you know, made a decision to give Shirley a show here. And so that's what we did. I called Shirley up and let her know. And then, you know, I met with Shirley. Shirley has a studio with lots of work, and Shirley's often exhibiting and has been for years. And I went, and I think just us working together, we picked out, work for the exhibition. And this work emphasizes this theme of the Nile as a metaphor for Africa. And it's basically beneficial impact on African-American artists, African-American people, I should say. We know that that is our, you know, ancestral home, so to speak. And so it means a lot to us to either visit Africa or, you know, definitely embrace Africa. So the Nile is the metaphor for Africa. And so that's really what the work is about. But it's also about Shirley's interest in her ancestry, her family, her history here in Detroit. I mean, she's very well loved by the art community, but by many people, because Shirley was also an important teacher in the education community. So she's well known there as well in the public schools. So there were just so many reasons to do something with Shirley. And it was, you know, to a great extent, way overdue. Shirley had shown here, I think in 1960 in a group exhibition. And this is sort of like her coming home to do something at this point in her life. And since she's received this great honor, and we knew that would make a lot of our own community here in Detroit very happy to do something with Shirley. And so it's had a wonderful impact on the museum and even, again, going beyond Detroit, really, because she's a star. Everyone loves her.
Yeah, well, Shirley, it's an honor to speak with you, and congratulations on the exhibition. I'm curious to know, what was it like to get that phone call about the opportunity to do the show? Was it exciting? Were you nervous about trying to pick what it might be? You know, you have 60 years worth of a body of work, you know, and then you have to kind of find what it is. What was that initial reaction when you got that call?
Well, prior to the call from the Detroit Institute of Arts, from Valerie called me, I had already received the Eminent Artists Award, which also came to me by a phone call. And so I did a repeat from my response to the announcement that I was receiving the Eminent Artists Award, and I didn't say anything. I was speechless. And so these were two kind of back-to-back phone calls that came in, and I was definitely overwhelmed and really pleased about the recognition and the exhibition here at the Detroit Institute of Arts. I'm just thrilled with that opportunity.
So the paintings in this exhibition span years of time. They were not all created at one moment. When did you first begin painting what became this series?
Well, the concept of involving African history in my work was, you know, there several years before. 1984 is the time that the works begin in the show. And so they go from 1984 to 2014, I believe. And so over that period of time, there were lots of paintings that I did in that vein that were, you know, there were changes and developments in the work, but it seemed to be a place where I was settling in terms of the environment and the, you know, my way of communicating.
So Valerie, I'm curious what you were expecting. I'm sure that people would love the show and there would be a great reaction to it, but there certainly has been an overwhelming reaction. I've seen coverage on all kinds of national outlets and all kinds of things. And as you said, Shirley has become, or at least is now recognized as the star she is. What's that been like, the reaction to the show? I'm sure it's been somewhat overwhelming.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, it's been really very enjoyable. You know, sort of watching this and experiencing it, and then looking at Shirley sometimes, who looks kind of, you know, very happy, but at the same time, a little stunned. I keep asking her, is she having fun? And she says, she always says yes. I let her know when she needs it, right, just to tell me, but she just keeps on going. She's enjoying it immensely. But, you know, again, it's not that it's so surprising but it's, I think it's so well-deserved, you know, and it's just great that this is happening for Shirley. And I think when it comes to, you know, a number of talented artists, and especially, you know, women, and I have to say women and people of color, you know, they often have not been given the attention they should have received by the art world, whether it's local or national or international. But, you know, that's certainly changing, and I'm very happy for it, because, you know, a lot of them are definitely influential in their communities and beyond, but they often have to, you know, they basically are very dedicated to what they do, even when they don't get the attention. They just keep right on going. I have to say, I know other artists like Shirley, you know, other women artists who are very dedicated to what they do. And like Shirley, you know, they, especially if they teach and do other things, they just have these goals in mind. So they just keep at their work, you know. And I heard Shirley say even just a little while ago that she, you know, would work during the day, you know, teaching whatever, but then she'd go home at night and do her painting, you know. So that's what they do. And you have to be that kind of person, you know, I think really dedicated. Because I think the creative drive is something that really does keep pushing you. You look forward to sitting down at your easel. It's work, but, you know, it's something that they're compelled to do. I think very much like a writer, you know, you got ideas, you got to get them, you know, down on the canvas. And the writer has to do that with paper. And so, you know, they're just, they're very, Shirley is very disciplined. But again, when Shirley tells you about her life, I mean, she's somewhat been like this since she was a child. She always knew she wanted to be an artist. And I just think that's wonderful, you know, being a little child and being creative, but also having the support and love of your family, you know, your parents, who are not actually artists themselves, but yet, you know, they love you and they give you all the support you need to develop and, you know, send you to school, all that. And I just think that's wonderful. It's just a wonderful example of what you do for someone you love. You know, you want to see them blossom. And I think that's what her parents wanted for her. And she certainly has. You know, I just am so impressed at her dedication. But again, I know you need to have that in order to do what makes you happy, you know. I've always thought of Picasso, how he worked like that all his life. And he kept up the same habits all his life until the end. And I'm sure in his own way, he was happy doing it, you know, because he was able to be productive and to be creative. And I just think that's so important for artists, no matter what.
Today's episode of Museum Confidential is sponsored by The Stuff in Storage. Most museums only show between 2 and 4% of their collections. You know what that means? Lots of stuff in storage. Is it bad stuff? Not worthy? Not good enough? No. No way. No one's saying that. There's just not enough room here, people. We wish there were. But it's not our call. It's not really up to us. Just be thankful we've got that stuff there waiting in the wings. Museums just aren't museums without all that stuff in storage.
Shirley, I know that you obviously have been in Detroit, in the Detroit area for a long time, but you're originally from Tennessee and came to Michigan as a young person. This show is about museums and about the love of museums. And it's interesting to have kind of a lifelong relationship with one institution. What did the Detroit Institute of Arts mean to you as a young person?
Well, the DIA early on, I started attending, they called them gifted and talented classes here at the DIA. And I think I started my first classes, I think I was in the seventh grade, and came every Saturday. And I came through, I attended all the way through high school. And it was my place. You know, it was my museum. I knew where all of the special exhibitions were. I was able to select my favorite artworks and become very familiar with the collection. And in our classes, we would actually work right in the galleries. So we might be in the favorite of mine was the Mesopotamian room. And there was a huge tile of like a dragon that I would go, even if we didn't work in that area that day, I would always go back and check it out just to make sure it was still there. So I was continually refreshing my memory. And, you know, there were wonderful things about the museum, the architecture that, you know, I just felt very free to go and visit and, you know, read about it, read the panels, and, you know, just really become not only associated with it, but that the museum was really there for me. I always felt that way, and other students, that weekly engagement was very important. And of course, it was an excellent foundation for when I continued my studies in college.
Valerie, I love how Shirley called it my museum, that kind of ownership. And I think we that's what we want people to feel when they come to museums. I'm curious, for you as a curator, what was the museum that kind of got you hooked on museums? Where did you first make that connection when you were young?
For me, I grew up in Philadelphia. So for me, it was the Philadelphia Museum of Art. You know, I was always, I was always drawing when I was a little girl. I was always making things. And, you know, my parents just gave me support at doing that. I thought it was, a good thing. So I would go to the museums, and I just would find when I went to a museum, I would just learn so many wonderful things. It was I had an interest as well in history. So it was a wonderful way as well to learn about history, but also to learn about many cultures. Philadelphia Museum is has a great collection, and it's a beautiful place. So I enjoyed going there, and it just stuck with me. And then, you know, when I, as a young adult, I guess when I went to New York University to study art history, you know, that was kind of like heaven, because I could go in and out of museums. And actually, a lot of our assignments took place right, you know, at the Metropolitan Museum or a number of museums in New York. So it was just wonderful. And I understand Shirley's feeling, because for me, I felt like when I went to the Museum of Modern Art, that it was my museum while I was in it. And I could go back there and visit certain things I just loved to look at, things that would make me actually feel very good. You know, things that were like in the permanent collection, some things that were always on view. But even when I went to see a temporary exhibition, I'd always go and look at this one or two favorite things I love, because they always made me feel really good. And so, and they could come from different cultures, you know. I remember there was some photography I liked by a French photographer. I would always go and see one or two of the same pieces, but looking at them just sort of gave me such a boost emotionally, you know, just made me feel wonderful. But the whole world of, you know, creativity, I think, you know, that's what you get when you're in a museum, you know, and the fact that it's coming from so many different cultures for me was very exciting. You know, I always wanted to learn about different cultures. So that's what I did when I eventually, you know, studied art history as an undergraduate at New York University, and then as a graduate student at Harvard. So, but I still do that whenever I travel. Like, I'm not a person, I think Shirley can relate to this too. I'm not a person, like, I don't go to beaches so much, even though I don't hate beaches, but usually when I go on vacation, I go to a city that has a lot of museums. And, you know, I'll do things like do a lot of walking to see the sites, the architecture and all. But I'm often going to the museums in those cities because I learn so much, you know, when I do that.
Yeah, my wife and I base our vacations around three things: food, museums, and bookstores. That's pretty much all we do.
Same here.
So Shirley, when I was a kid and I would sometimes see one of my teachers at a grocery store or something, it threw me off because I didn't understand they had lives outside of the classroom. Yes. And I wonder, I'm sure this show has reconnected you with a lot of past students. And did your students ever understand the vibrant life of an artist that was happening outside the classroom? Did they know you in that sense, or was it totally separated?
No, my younger students, they were, you know, art, coming to art on a particular day was the highlight of the day. The art room was, you know, another venture and another process. And so I rarely sat at my desk when I was teaching. I would sit at the table with the kids or, you know, show some, you know, demonstrate a couple of things right in their midst where they could, you know, see what I meant. When I did the, for example, painting, you know, I showed them all of the various techniques that you use when you're doing a watercolor painting, for example. And they would have a sheet for that. And so they would do, you know, wet on wet, dry brush, the loaded brush, and, you know, how you can have just a little bit of paint on your brush and you can make sand or dirt, or you could make a lovely sky by putting water down on paper first and then putting a stroke of blue or another color for the sky, and they watch the water spread. And, you know, those were things that were always, they love doing, they love making. All of my kids, one of the first tools they got, you know, other than a painting or a drawing tool, scissors. And so we were always cutting. We were always making whatever it took to, you know, just to familiarize them with materials and that they could build or create anything they wanted. So I really concentrated on the tools and materials with the younger students. And then with the older students, you know, we were a little more industrious. We kind of used, you know, we sort of went on a, you know, the path of production. So if we were doing linoleum prints or a series, they learned the concept of series and, you know, signing your work. And you just try to give them a full experience of what it does. It's, you know, it just doesn't end with one visit, you know, to your work. So, and then by the, in my college teaching, the students would come to my exhibitions. And of course they had exhibitions that they were responsible for, you know, within their college experience or assignments that I would give. So I was, in each of those cases, I was just trying to impress upon students who were taking art that it's a complete thing. It's not a, I mean, you can take it home and put it on the fridge, and I always made sure they took home those things so their parents would understand what they're doing. But nonetheless, they were also understanding the concept of planning and executing and completing, and then finally the exhibition. So that was sort of the basis of the way that I taught at all levels.
The exhibition has a couple months left here and still very much in the middle of the show, and a lot of time for people to see it. But I'm curious, and either one of you or both can speak to this. We talked about the interest this has generated in your work. What's next? Is there an idea of what's coming next? I'm sure you're being approached with other opportunities, and maybe some are secrets, so you can't say. But is there any sense of what comes next for you?
Well, I'm working on many projects right now. I have, you know, new work that I'm doing, and you know, I'm open for invitations.
Well, one thing to follow up, I'm curious, is this series in your mind, you said, you know, it runs from 1984 to 2014. Is this work completely finished in your mind, or do you see yourself returning to this?
No, it's ongoing. I mean, Valerie pointed out to referring to Picasso and you know, his work ethic, if you want to call it that, his drive. But artists, it's the same painting. You never finish it. You know, it may be on different surfaces, but your message and the intensity of your message is continued. So it may move from, you know, it may move from a painting to ceramics. It may move in many different directions, but you're always telling and embracing the same quality of, you know, of interest and wanting to keep pushing towards a higher level of communication with your art.
Rivers I have seen and rivers I have known, ancient than the world and older than the blood. I've known rivers, I've known rivers, all through Africa and North America, South America and Australia. I've known rivers, I've known rivers, I've known rivers in the north and the south. I've known rivers in the east and the west.
The Detroit Institute of Arts boasts more than 100 galleries covering well over 600,000 square feet. Their collection is massive, valued in the billions. All the big art names are there, but also Kermit the Frog and Howdy Doody. In late 2010, the museum opened a permanent gallery dedicated to the art of puppetry. Hand puppets, shadow puppets, string puppets, they're all there. And just think, one day we might be able to answer the eternal two-part question.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side? Rainbows are visions, but only illusions, and rainbows have nothing to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong, wait and see. Someday we'll find it, the rainbow connection, the lovers, the dreamers, and me.
Well, that's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory in the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. Additional production assistance from Jack Dean. Theme music by Broncho. For more on the museum and the station, visit philbrook.org or publicradiotulsa.org or both. As always, we suggest both. Until next time, look closer.